The following program has been furnished and paid for by Nathan P. Ross, CPA, and KSCB and KGBC are not responsible for its content or the products or services offered.
Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show. It's Sunday, so this is the cybersecurity AI version. And as usual, I have my expert on the topics, Mr. AI Nguyen. Nguyen, how are you today?
Oh, good morning, Nathan. How's it going? Well, it's a beautiful day in Houston, though.
Oh, is it? Is it cool today?
It's cool, sunshine, no cloud.
Yeah, that does sound nice. As you may or may not recall from your ute, it's rainy season here, at least in my part of Southeast Asia.
Well, usually when it gets closer to Thanksgiving, you're going to see it.
Oh, really? See, ours starts in about May or June and ends in late October, early November. So we're right there on the mark, but boy, Thailand had an incredible amount of rain this past week. Many, many parts of Thailand. So I don't know. You know, it's about this time every year we think, man, can it rain anymore? I mean, is it possible? But anyway, well, Nguyen, what shall we be speaking about today? I know you've got several agenda points, and I'm going to get that in front of me. I'm still trying to get logged in.
We can talk about things that matter for the past past week that we encountered. AWS down, and then afterward you have Microsoft is down, and the issues are related to the same thing, basically.
Is it really? Oh, yeah. Is it some back doors, you think, that were left from other recent
events? Of course, they're not going to say. We don't have a definite answer. But we have from, at least we know from AWS, they say it's a DNS issue. So from the viewer, what is DNS? So I want to go over that real quick. You know, why is DNS so critical to our network?
Yeah.
So basically, I'll go start with this. DNS is a domain name server system. So essentially, the internet is like an address book, right? When it fails connecting between you and the cloud servers, it breaks down. It makes an application and website temporary, unreachable. Unreachable.
Yeah. Yep. It's like a traffic cop, is it not?
Well, think about this. You're not going to remember your IP address. Like if you have a website, an IP address with like 142 and 99.2, you don't remember. So DNS helps.
It's a lot of numbers.
So it maps the name, like NP ROS, to the IP address, so people don't have to remember your IP address, right?
That way,
it make like searching the dictionary. You don't search for the page number; you search for the name, and then you go down to the index, right? Imagine that's all go away, right? And everything we depend on, like the internet. You remember in 1990s that the first internet, there was no internet; it was bulletin board, right? You use your modem, you dial in, and then you know you go to one website, right? And that's it. You don't have to go anywhere, so it doesn't matter. And then then several years later have they have internet like where bulletin board talk to each other. Now you dial to one place, then you go to another place. That's how the internet started in the '90s.
Yeah,
we so depend on the DNS, especially the cloud, right? In the cloud, I told people basically somebody else's computer. What come down to it, right? You host all your application, and imagine it all go down. So it happened last week, and it happened last year too. So what's the deal, right? And then we say, you know, maybe it's AWS. And the following week, Microsoft has the same issue. So what's going on? So I want to touch base about, you know, what is critical and the solution, especially for business. What are they going to do? What's the plan, right? Because it's going to happen again, I'm telling you.
So well, and it's not like we're out of the woods on any of the recent events anyway, right? You don't know.
Mm.
You don't know what's still out there that can be accessed from what somebody left, where they left the key under the mat, you know?
So that is funny you say that. Just like forget to lock your door and leaving the key under the mat, right?
Yeah.
So the AWS outage teaches us a lot. So this happened on October 29th. Okay, AWS suffered a regional DNS outage. So not it doesn't happen to everybody, but enough to send a signal, you know. But one of the major like EC2 server and S3 like storage bucket. So AWS engineer traced the issue flaw down to the automated system, which left the DNS record empty and unresolved. That's what they say, right?
Yeah.
So let's talk about Microsoft. So let's assume that AWS has a DNS issue. What are Microsoft? On the same day, Microsoft Azure platform was also hit with DNS crisis. Okay, and they say configuration change in Azure front door corrupted DNS routing path. So my question, you think about it, if the bad guy knows how much you depend on it, they're going to hit this. They're going to hit you when it's hurt.
Well, not only that, who controls, is it called Internic? What's the name of the organization that kind of sits at the top that issues IP addresses? That it used to be solely the U.S., and then I know at one point it was supposed to switch to, I believe, European.
So,
and I thought we tried to stop it or something because, you know, it was okay. Such a critical component, right?
So the DNS domain name service is controlled through a distributed hierarchy of managed by several international organizations and a local domain manager, of course. You know, you have a top-level global DNS stewardship fall to the Internet Assigned. They call INA, I-A-N-A, Internet Assigned Number Authority, which oversees the root of all operation and delegate control top-level domain. Like, select organization, government, or company such as operator, country code, all of those stuff. So you
and
have,
do we suspect bad actors in any of those supposedly
nobody talk about it. Nobody talk yeah. about it. Nobody pinpoint, but what do you think? What are the two biggest company, DNS, AWS, and Microsoft, suffer the same thing? And, of course, yeah. we're not going to tell the bad guy that you successfully, you know, affecting the entire internet, so they know. But all the things going on at the same time, you know, why it's all happened in October and November? You notice that? Why do you think we call
sure
it October
be,
is a hacker yeah, hacker month? Yeah,
common.
Yeah,
sure seems to be common.
So,
but
the company. So, what are you going to do? Are you going to continue to? So, what is the solution? What's a long term solution? So everybody, all the company are talking about that because it happened that day. I tell you, I have people call me and say, hey, everything is down. My friend called me. And I say, well, did you read the internet? Or you know what? Speaking of which right now, there's a company called Bleeping Computers. So basically it's a is the platform to talk about the cybersecurity stuff, and they are down right now. I cannot access to it. Okay. And there's another company called DocTrace. DocTrace is a endpoint security. Another one. I cannot get to their website right now either. And DocTrace is a cyber AI demo. Look, they can't really get to it. There's some bunch of them are, a lot of major companies are still down, as we speak right now.
Now, is it down or was it taken down as a preventative
measure? So I cannot reach the website, and they're not confirming it either. I got two companies that I use the most, Bleeping Computers and DocTrace, and they're not even on. Let me try Microsoft real quick. Let's see here. I can go to Microsoft. I can go to CrowdStrike, but I cannot reach Bleeping Computer and DocTrace.
Hmm.
So if they use either AWS bucket or they use Azure, well, it's not. So what happened in AWS, if you in the eastern region, or AWS, they have western region, eastern region. So it happened in the eastern region. If you have a server on the eastern region, it's going to affect you. So what are you going to do? See, the redundancy. So we need to talk about what, how do you cope? How are you coping with this? Okay. So if it were you, what would you do? What is the solution? So here are some of the things that that a company should talk about. Long-term enterprise recommendation, like have more than one cloud. So basically, like you have this one happened in the East region, you should have like in the Western region. Or if they have another location like outside United States, I don't know, I'm just thinking at loud. But then again, if they hit you with a DNS in one region, they can hit you another DNS in another region. You see the problem? Maybe we have to go back to the day that you have to the data center, you know? Have your own data center again. So
there'll still be external and internal risk even in that scenario, you know?
Well, at least you have a resilient, think about resilient backup. Because right now, think about this. A lot of stuff we do on the cloud, like you have, imagine in a court date, you have people all in court. They depend on the computer. But then again, how do we do it like 20 years ago when we don't have a computer, right?
So when you can unplug your computer in your office.
So back then, how do we do it, right? So how do we do 20 years ago when we don't have internet? So now it forces us to rethink about walking backward compatible.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, the cloud involved a lot of compromises, and yet it had significant benefit. And I don't know. It just seems like every time we turn around, we realize another vulnerability that we didn't have. And yet we've got, again, significant efficiencies have been realized.
You know how that that's a picture I was looking at, like that. You have a caveman, then become a man, then
I've
you're walking.
And stuff.
Okay, then it go on the top, then go back down again, right?
Yeah.
So it's evolving. It's like a stimulus circle. So we have to think it out like that. So now it forced me to think, what are we going to do? So my suggestion to people, back up. Have a lot of backup, okay? Like a hot site. Not just a warm site, but hot site. If you have a mission critical application, think about, you know, how they do cold site, hot site, and warm site.
I used to. I don't quite. I mean, I know they've got ways of getting from point A to point B, different simultaneous methods. I've seen maps of what happens if a cable gets cut in the Pacific versus the Atlantic and the rerouting that takes place and all that.
So basically you have two
systems. It's a similar concept.
Yeah, you have two systems. Imagine you have two systems and they're backing up with each other. They sync. And if one system down, you turn off the other one and you manually turn on the other one, right? And there got to be the way that you do without rely on a DNS. Maybe another way that company use a VPN to log in directly. There's several ways that we can do it, but there's a solution. For every problem, there's a solution. But we have to start thinking about now because it's going to happen again. It happened to AWS. This is not something new. It's last year. Well, this year, not a lot of, you know, the funny thing, a lot of people screaming, they seem like they accepted it, you know? But then again, it happened like not everybody completely, but enough to sound the alarm. Right. Then next following week happened to Microsoft. There are so many things going on right now. So that's one of the. So the question is, cloud security, what can we do? So beside the cloud, we need to start about. Oh, did you see the new NVIDIA chip? And they designed and is AMD. They're talking about like changing all the data center computers. You see how small that thing is?
I know it's gotten smaller and it's gotten cheaper and more powerful all at the same time. It's kind of amazing. And you know, you're talking about a churn cycle or a cycle of replacement that's just like, when do you jump in, right? If you're a big data center or own multiple big data centers, as some of the current ownership is. I mean, how do you just I mean, just the juggling act to get them physically changed would seem to me to be a monumental task, right?
Yeah.
How do you do that, you know?
Well, you know, the hardware usually advances faster than the software. Usually they come out first and the software takes advantage of it. So I saw something from NVIDIA that came out with a server, 64 core, and they sell, like, it's a Linux platform. And they sell like $4,000. You cannot believe how small that thing is. So if you look at that server today in the data center, like the one that I see, you have like Intel with quad 4, quad 8, like 4 processor. And then you have a big platform inside. You get memories, that kind of stuff. It's huge and it's heavy. But imagine that you have like 100 CPU in one platform like that. One box. Okay, 100 CPU capability. So instead of because if you put anything on the data center, you and I both know it's expensive. You're leasing the rack. It's expensive, right? If you really, if you lease like 4 rack, it go up to like 10,000-20,000 easily, right? But imagine if you have 1 rack and you have 1 platform. You have like 1 case, 1 rack, 1 case. And then you have 1 CPU platform, which is 1 U that have all the processor. And the second one you have, another thing too, Seagate should jump up a lot too, because all the hard drive, you have a CPU, now you have the hard drive, right? So they're not going to use like a spinning hard drive like they used to. They're going to use like, what do you call it? I lost my train of thought. Like the hard drive doesn't
flash
have.
Flash drives?
Yeah, they're kind of like a flash drive, but yeah, kind of. But it doesn't have the spinning disk, right?
Right.
So, imagine that. It's just even the battery. And now, here's a caveat, though. It's going to use more power. Those CPUs can use more power. But then again, you use more power, but you use more efficiently, right? So things are going to change. So the way that the server platform, the CPU, the hard drive, even the motherboard, how small. I have a computer in the palm of my hand that can run the entire household products. Okay, I'm talking about a CPU that's so small on the palm of my hand, and there's no moving part. That's the key. There's no moving part. No moving part means less heat, right?
Yeah.
And then there's just it's amazing where we are going. So all this platform, all this stuff, technology evolving significantly. So it's amazing how those. So AMD just came out with a new one too, and fifth generation CPU. So you have AMD, and then you have AI, all kind of stuff. Things are changing rapidly.
Yeah, and unlike the Social Security wage base, speaking of other news, the price is coming down in the hardware world. You have any idea? When do you remember? And I know you are a little bit younger than me. Your first job that didn't involve self-employment. How old were you at that point?
I am not going to disclose my age.
Well, the question I was going to ask you, let me get back to this chart.
You know,
just give me a ballpark. What year was it like? Let's see. It would have been sub. It would have been probably 90 or sub 90, maybe.
Okay.
Mid 80s.
Talk about hardware prices.
No, we can go. We can get there as well. In fact, that's a good segue since you had your own computer store. At about, I know, early 80s, mid 80s.
God, those computers expensive. Those computers.
They were, relatively speaking.
And it had to be heavy, you know.
Yeah.
The mentality is, if you charge somebody $5,000, back then, the mentality, if you charge somebody $5,000, it had to be heavy. It's light. It's cheap. Remember compact machine? 325.
Which one? The luggable?
The luggable that when you had the NASA, those guys bring it up to the space shuttle. Yeah, I remember. Those are like 10 grand, right?
Back then?
Back then, $10,000.
Oh, yeah. No, I had the double floppy model, the first one, and then I had the XT equivalent, you know, the one with the hard drive.
XT 3000, and then compact server, compact 325, CPU Pentium, yeah. 80 to 86, and then you had a coprocessor 80 to 87 to help process. That was back then were like 16 colors, like EGA. You know, then comes the VGA. But then what I see in the 1900 after the Pentium, first Pentium come out. After that, you see it advanced significantly, from 1990 to 1995. Apple came out with, you know, that the one that makes Steve Jobs famous, the Apple 4E, the one that looked like the one that he came back. Yeah, the 2E. The one
the
that
2E and the Lisa were the two.
Yeah, all built in, all in one. Remember?
Yeah. Yeah.
And what unique about that, I still have that Apple today. I still have it.
Do you really?
And what,
you have one of
those? And what when you open it, let me tell you how you know it's legit, how you know it's a real thing. Inside Apple, you open the box, open the case. Inside, it has signature of six people that designed this thing, including Steve Jobs and the other five significant.
Huh.
And it said, we're the one that built this.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that cost about how much? $4,000 or $5,000 back then. $4,000 or $5,000. You know.
I'd say at least that. I can't
oh,
remember.
Oh no,
right?
It's $4,000 or $5,000.
Yeah, I didn't have an Apple until
20 meg hard drive.
Yeah.
And 256 RAM memory. $4,000 or $5,000.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that I don't know. I think it's probably more. I mean the PC. I can remember, and this is after the Apple model you're talking about, but I remember Wise, W-Y-S-E. I had a 16 gigahertz 386.
Y. Oh, yeah, yeah. I remember that.
It was a $13,000 machine.
Yeah.
And that was a monochrome monitor. That was not color. Okay?
Yeah.
And it's like, man, what do we spend our money on now? You know, when you think of all the savings we should have, you know, just on buying computer hardware.
So
anyway, the reason I mentioned Social Security, just to deviate here for a moment, the chart that I'm looking at goes back to 1998 when the wage base, the maximum level that you would pay Social Security on, was $68,400 on annual salary. That's 1998.
Wow.
2026, the current year increase due to COLA, cost of living adjustment, was just announced this week. You want to guess what it's up to for 2026,
Wynn? No, go ahead.
$184,500.
Wow.
It's more than doubled. Shoot, 2.5 times in, what is that, 98 to, it's like 28 years. That's scary.
Evolving.
So that means the maximum, your tax, just think of it as your tax rate just went up from last year to this year. The increase is 4.7%. You will, if you pay, or if you are paid $184,500, you will pay your share, your half, as an employee is $11,439, and your employer is paying the rest of it, $11,439 as well. So your maximum total contribution to Social Security, yours and the employer's, it's almost $23,000.
Wow.
Is that not insane?
Wow.
When you think about it, I mean, that is unbelievable. And the system is in such bad shape. This isn't going to fix anything. This is just to continue going in the hole every year. Now, what's going to slow it a tinge is when, and this isn't official yet, but everybody knows it's coming, is when there's no limit. If you make $2 million in a year, you're going to pay 0.062, your half, and then 0.062 is what the employer will pay. Now, this is not counting Medicare, okay? Medicare's another chunk. It's what is it, 2.9% total, 1.45% on each employee and employer. But Social Security, in many cases, when Social Security and Medicare are the highest piece of tax that those making, I don't know, I've seen the number, I want to say it's less than, if you're making 50 grand or less, there's some number in that ballpark, your predominant tax bill is because of Social Security and Medicare. It's not income tax.
Hmm.
Isn't that amazing? It's quite a system that morphed into.
I don't know how the next generation, like baby boomer, a lot of people, maybe not a baby boomer, but the people who retire in the next 5 to 6 years, don't know how they're going to
survive. Well, that is baby. I'm a baby boomer. I'm at the end of it, though.
Yeah.
Or wait a minute, is it baby boomer I'm looking for? Yeah, baby boomer is the term.
I'm
65. I'm either the last year or the next last, or the, I'm sorry, I'm the first of the next period, whatever you call that. But the baby boomers are the ones going into the Medicare. Medicare is a better measure because Medicare is, for the most part, not optional. But there were, until just recently, and it may still be for the next year or two, if I'm not mistaken, the number is either 10,800 people every day or 12,800. It's one of those two numbers.
So
doesn't matter.
So one out of
are
three
are going on to the Medicare rolls every day. Think about that.
I read something on YouTube the other day that there was this guy. He said, this old man actually, he said, I was homeless in America. But when he came back to Vietnam, he said, I'm a middle class in Vietnam. Based on $2,000 he got from Social Security, he go back to Vietnam and he live. You say, I'm a middle class.
Oh, yeah. Well, I see that over here. You can live, that's the nice thing or the interesting thing about a lot of Southeast Asia cities is there's so many different levels that you can exist at. You know, there's a level of housing, a level of food, a level of clothing, all the essentials for many different types of budgets. And I would just tell you, as a single person, $1,500 to $1,700 a month is a better lifestyle than what you'll experience in America. For, you know, maybe in America it'd be $4,500 to $5,000. And of course, you know, if you've got money to spend 10 grand a month, you're living literally like a king.
Well, this guy, he's homeless over here. He's homeless. He doesn't have a house. He doesn't have anything. So he came back and he said, I'm a middle class.
Well, there's a lot of people that are moving to Southeast Asia just for that reason. And I've said it many times, you know, if you don't have enough retirement savings, which, by the way, is at least 50% of all Americans do not have enough retirement savings to live through retirement. It's a huge number. Well, you've got two choices. You can either go and live somewhere where your cost of living's less, or you can find some money tree to shake more savings out of it to stay where you're at. And, you know, there's a lot of people that have decided it's better. And it's not just the financial issue. I've talked about it on the show many times, mainly on the Friday. You know, we've got a show that comes on Friday at 11 a.m. where, you know, the longevity under the new medicines, new medical technology, et cetera, has just markedly increased the level of retirement savings that one needs to make it through retirement. And, you know, you've got a choice again. And I'm not saying there's no other factors to consider. I'm just telling you, in the context of basic financial requirement, you'll live longer here, for instance, in Bangkok, and there's many other cities in Southeast Asia where your cost of living is dramatically lower than it is in most major American cities.
What about Medicare? What about when you get sick? That's always been the challenge.
Well, that's an issue potentially. I mean, it depends on your ability to, one, pay for things out of pocket, or two, get back to America if it's some life event that exceeds what you can handle out of pocket.
Yeah, but that's the problem. When you fly back in an old age, for example, that the if you have the a medical condition with that kind of high risk when you fly back to the United States to you know, to be performed by the doctor over here.
Yeah,
it makes no sense to me.
It very well may. On the other hand, and I mean, we could debate this forever. I would tell you, anytime you enter an American hospital, you've got a heightened risk of not making it. Okay, and I know that sounds morbid, but I'm just telling you, pull any chart you want to pull that shows the relative ranking of the U.S. healthcare system over the rest of the world, and you'll be amazed at how high some of the Southeast Asia cities are, including Bangkok, and how low America is. I mean, it's night and day different in terms of the care. And I would suggest to you there's many things that you would be able to afford out of pocket on that $2,000 limit or $2,000 Social Security budget that I mentioned. I think I may have mentioned to you when I had an emergency room visit here about 3 weeks ago to get some stitches. And the stitches, CT scan to make sure my brain was okay, which, you know, it's always interesting to see what those might turn up, right? And 20-plus x-rays, doctor to put the stitches in, that whole experience was about $700 U.S., okay? Emergency room. Do you have any idea what that would have cost in a Houston or San Antonio or Dallas hospital?
$100.
You know, oh, I don't know, but you mean 100,000? I don't think it'd be that much, well, but I bet it would have been several thousand.
I tell you, from experience of my mom, then when she has a bypass and I saw the bill, the heart bypass, how much do you think it costs for the heart bypass?
Well, I don't know. Over here, it'd be interesting to see. And I am doing some research because, as you know, I'm starting to consult with people, mainly American, that want to get out of Wokesville, I'll call it, America, and come to this part of the world. And the health care, you know, I'm trying to figure out the break even on certain of the, just like we're talking about right now, there's certain things that I would say there's not even a question as to you it being better off to stay here and pay for it out of savings. I mean, if you wouldn't move over here without having some savings, I wouldn't say. I would say that's just a prerequisite, like it would be if you're going to move anywhere. I mean, you know, if you're on Medicaid, well, you're going to have a tough time in America. Mm. You don't have a choice to move overseas. But I'm saying if you got a choice to move overseas, and you've got, I'm not talking about being a millionaire, but let's just say you've got, you know, $100,000 or $200,000 in retirement savings plus Social Security, I think you're pretty well set over here unless you just have some horrible, horrible experience. And I hate to keep sounding or you know, giving you my specific issues, but I had about 3 years ago, after I got back from America, I had an incident where I was in the hospital here for 35 days. And I brought it back from America. And that visit with CT scan, spinal taps, and medicines, private room, everything, 35 days was about $14,000 U.S. $14,000 U.S. That would have been $500,000 if it was a penny in Houston or, again, San Antonio or Dallas. And the deductible alone on that would have exceeted,
easily,
you know, it'd be like seven times what I had to pay for everything. I had no insurance coverage that applied over here. And so I'm just telling you, that's one area that I don't – now, I've got, you know, enough miles banked on my United – account that I've got probably 20 business class tickets already paid for, so I don't worry about getting back. Only thing I would worry about getting back to America for is getting stuck in an American hospital, and you know, I can't imagine what my outcome might have been on the 35-day visit if it had been in Houston as opposed to over here.
I'm more worried about flying back I'm talking about the high altitude. If you,
high altitude is they got pressurized cabins these days. Would I like flying back? No, but you know, if let's just say, God forbid, you had an incident, and I don't know what it would be because I don't think they'd have anything here that would reach up to the $500,000 or $1 million range. Mm-hmm. I would think you would probably pass away before whatever it was, was cured. But you know, that would be the reason I would fly back. It wouldn't be to avoid a $15,000 or $20,000 bill. I mean, that wouldn't make sense because even if you have the cost of the trip covered, you still would rather not get on a plane, you know, when you feel bad. I mean, you know, I felt bad when I came back from America to Thailand that 3 years ago, and that wasn't fun, but it beat. I can't imagine had I gone to a hospital in America and instead of coming on back here. I was so lucky, so fortunate to get back here. But anyway, my point is there's people all around the world living a different lifestyle, and in many cases, like Bangkok, it's a better lifestyle on less money. And so if you've got a financial limitation in retirement, better have it in a country like Thailand, where at least you've got a little bit of a head start just because of not just the dollars involved, it's the culture. I mean, the care that I received was so much higher than what I've heard about in the U.S. system. And, of course, my mother, you may recall, was an emergency room RN, a nurse, and I understand a bit more than some people do about what, you know, the system is designed to accommodate. And, you know, when you look at, I mean, there's certain things it hadn't quite gotten here yet, like private equity doesn't own a lot of the medical professions, you know, the professionals. Like, for instance, ophthalmologists that are giving the eye injections that I have to get. That's almost in the Houston, well, in Texas, it's almost a total private equity play now. And, expensive cost. If you're one like me that I didn't have an in-network retina specialist that I could get, you know, a reasonable rate for. I mean, I called around to several. They all happened to be in this one private equity group, and it was $6,000 per eye for the shots that I was getting monthly.
Holy cow.
Think about that. Mm. Yeah. And the insurance company I had, which I had bought, you know, off the ACA exchange, didn't have one retina doctor in Houston or San Antonio. Crazy. And so, you know. Anyway, sorry for that deviation. I just had that pop into my email.
No, we are good. That's a good
talking email. And I tell you, it's a threatening world on more than one front.
Well, the next segment we're going to talk about problem and solution, and the new thing I want the user to know about too, you know, about the we have more stuff on cyber attack and AI involve AI. And
okay, and, well, let's, yeah. You know, we're close enough to the end of the show. We got about 15 minutes left. Why don't we forego our normal break and go on into that?
Good idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you're referring to cloud security or?
You want to do a break now or you want to do it after the break?
Oh, I would say let's forego the break and just go right to the end, if that's okay
so,
with
yeah,
you.
That's fine. So, you know, yeah. They have the new called business email compromise. We talk all about that all the time, right? And like email to send you how realistic it is. And this time, this call, the term is hyper-realistic phishing and social engineering. And what it is, they're using a large language model like LLM, analyze social media. They look at your social media, the leaking data, online behavior, and they craft the email, the message that perfectly mimic the human writing style. I have seen it, and I'm telling you, a lot of security system cannot handle it. They bypass it, okay? And it's so realistic, and at the same time, it blasting so many, okay? And it will bypass the basic security filter and protection like SPF, DKIM, and DMARC. Those are security measures that you configure your email to call, more like identity management. You know, like before I send it, I have to verify who you are. But it sent it out so many in a vast data that a lot of them like bypasses, like it cannot handle it, those amount of data. Number one, it's too much and overcome. And secondly, the message that they're sending, I'm telling you, is so realistic. And then you have the voice and video deepfake scam as well at the same time. Last week, I've seen all of this at the same time. Voice and video, like somebody calling and they're using American accent. And I play along with it. And they say, hey, you know what? We approve your banking for $60,000.
Oh, God. I get four of those calls a day.
Yeah.
It's scary.
So now they're scary. Using, those are AI. You realize that. There's not a real human, right?
Yeah.
And that's how this tell you what it evolved, that AI is so advanced now, okay? Then, and of course, Google and Microsoft force you to do authenticate on all the website now. You notice that? Like verify your age, and they also shut down a bunch of accounts you don't even use.
Yeah.
So, but what I'm about to tell you is the next thing, the next level is going to scare everyone. Cybercrime as a service. Remember, you have like email as a service. You have software as a service, right? Now you have cybercrime as a service. What does that mean? Well, basically, malicious actors are now renting AI attack tools, enabling even a non-expert to run sophisticated automated cyber attack, a little $50 per campaign. And those voice that you receive, voicemail that automated approved banking, that's one of them. That's one of them. Just a $50, you can hire someone from the darknet, a system that automate, I'm talking about the campaign, I'm talking about a phishing campaign, I'm talking about deployment of the virus, and I'm talking about a messaging system and a payment system. Basically, all in one. And they do that complex attack around the world right now. Cybercrime as a service.
We've discussed on the air before the scam centers. They're like co-working spaces that have popped up in Philippines and
Cambodia,
Myanmar,
Cambodia.
And mm-hmm. Yeah, Cambodia, and I'm not sure. I think I've seen we've got some here in the U.S. I can't remember where they occur, but basically, there's entire office buildings outfitted with computers and phone lines and internet, all the things one needs, and you can rent by the desk, so to speak. It's crazy, absolutely crazy.
You see, that's another thing, right? And right now, I have people that I know, like the elder, and I told them, you don't use a computer, just shut it down. Basically, just tell them to shut it down.
Unplug it.
Unplug it. Just no, unplug not, it. Not unplug it. They probably don't have to plug it back in. But I just give them a button. I just show them. I'm helping them just press a button. And unless you can, always verify. That's the thing called zero trust. That's another term. Zero trust. Trust no one and verify all. I don't care if you know somebody. If you receive an email from the bank, okay, you don't respond back the same email. Basically, you go directly to the bank and you say, they should. If there's something important, they should have like a message right there for you to look at, but do not respond. And another thing too, like dual factor authentication, I'm talking about when you go to the bank and they send you a code, correct? They send you a code, the secondary codes to verify who you are, right? Well, guess what? They can bypass all that. It's called Chrome. It's called the browser extension. All your cookies, all those stuff you save in there, your password, you save in there, they don't need to secondary communication. Some will bypass. They bypass it by doing that. They don't need the second code from the bank. They can go to your bank directly by going to your computers. All you have, take it one shot. And now, they're getting smarter. they're getting smarter and smarter, and they're using AI power. Man, that thing is scary. And you know what? I'm going to do some tests. I'm going to check it out. Or maybe I'll go to those services. I'm going to check it out. But the only problem is once you use their service, they know who you are. So make sure that you register. Make sure that you write everything down with your intention. Because if something happened, it'll go back to you, you know? The Fed going to those websites and say, hey, you're one of the customers. They're going to shine a light on you. You're the one who registered. What are you doing there? So that's what I'm worried right now. The cybercrime is a service and very highly realistic. They imagine this. I know the people, and you into real estate, right? They can go into the city hall, whatever, okay? They can take your title. It's happening right now. They're taking your title. If you don't have title protection, they can go change your title, sell your home. You don't even know it. Loan money against your house. You don't even know it. And by the way, one of those loans that they say you pre-approved is related to your title company. Apparently, they tried to hit the people with their home already paid off. Because I tried to pretend to listen to them, and they asked me those questions. Oh, by the way, you approved, but one last thing we know from you. Did you pay off your house? And you want to use your house as collateral. If you use it, it's gonna increase your loan to $200,000, for example. So yeah. They use that. That's how they do. So they targeting certain people. And guess who they target the most? The elder.
Oh, yeah.
But most of them pay off the house, and they don't know. They say yes to anything. So is this your name, Barbara? Yes. Number one, they want to hear you say yes, your voice, authentication. Okay? And secondly, you can circumvent, you know, the elder. You can ask them social engineering, you can bypass. That's another thing that I'm worried too. But that is the AI power we're talking about. Let's see, what else? Here, another one. God, cybercrime's everywhere. But here's a good thing, though. I want to talk about, we have enough time. You heard about the new robot that can do your work? The new robot?
Several of them.
This one is actually, I think I'm going to order it. This one from NIO, and it costs you $20,000, and it will be available next year, and so AI too. So the difference between this and the vacuum, you know, one of those things, or a Alexa, this one actually do the work. This one actually do the variety of a household chores and interact socially with family members. And that, let me tell you where I think this is going to help, especially when you in a senior place, okay? You have somebody to talk to. You have somebody to do work, play game with you, playing tic-tac-toe, whatever, play chess game. I'm going to test it out. Now, you can pay. They have two models. Either you buy upfront $20,000 or you can subscription model for $400, $4.99 a month. You can reserve it. And this is called the robot. I think Elon Musk have one as well. I don't know which one, but he has one as well. But I don't know when it can come out. But this one will come out next year. I'm going to test it. I want to see how this thing works.
Yeah.
Maybe you can use that to answer the phone. Like, instead of have the elder answer the phone, it will answer for them. And it will detect if it is a scam or not. It will respond automatically. Think about that.
Yeah, I think, I know we use the Ring Central product, cloud-based PBX, and they've added a AI agent type component to that system recently, and I haven't really scoped it out, but I plan to, and I was just thinking about the issue that you're trying to address, and I was thinking, you know, there could be a service there to where you assign each of the people in a certain program that you're offering or however you want to look at that, a separate phone number. It's the only, you don't give them, they wouldn't give out their cell number. They wouldn't give their number out to anybody. I mean, assuming they understand, I mean, that's part of the problem is the cognitive issues involved, but it would be like a barrier. It'd be like a VPN, if you will, on a phone system as opposed to.
And this is where I see the value. This is where I see the next thing value, because you can have somebody answer the phone for you, even answer, you know, like the pharmacy phone. You have like a pharmacy, CVS calling you, or Walgreens calling you on your medication. It can respond back to you. We can automate. I believe we can automate that to help the elder, the senior. Right now, you know, I see that the how we're going to improve. Okay, we know you and I were talking about Social Security. We're talking about other stuff. Now, what about the security? How do we help? Because the older you get, you know what? They no longer use a phone. I know a couple of them. They can no longer punch in the phone because their fingerprint no longer have lines. They cannot even touch a phone anymore. There's one elder that I helped that he no longer using the iPhone. He has to use regular phone because he cannot touch anymore, cannot authenticate anymore.
Yeah.
But this robot, you know, maybe next year when we got this, we may do a series about this weekly. And I'm telling you, this is where we're going with. Because a lot of them, they need somebody to talk to. And hopefully this is where the AI played the major part, helping them.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, Wynn, we've got about 1.5 minutes left. What else?
Oh, so that's the robot we're talking about, AI power as a service, okay? And let's see what else. Insider threat. Hijacking identity management is another one, okay? And by the way, that is going on. Did you hear about another? I hear like a billion. Is that Google? Billion information got hacked? Billion of information?
Well, I don't know. I thought Google, you know, denied and provided some proof that they weren't affected. I'm not sure I buy that, but whatever. It could have been, even if they managed to sidestep it. You know, I wouldn't be surprised next week to see that, you know, another group had succeeded if this one actually failed. But, yeah, it wasn't just Google. It was several of the big majors, right?
AT&T and the T-Mobile, all the banking, like you have. Oh, United Airlines is a famous one. And it's not over.
Yeah.
It's just the beginning. You think about it. Now, the next step, now they have your data, your information. Oh, by the way, I have a service now, and I cannot believe that I actually verify it. And this service say my password was compromised. I changed it. I changed them all. And I verified they actually have the password that I have. Okay? So do something with your phone. Use some software to protect your phone. And remember the one that I'm always using. I don't work for them, but I'm just telling you what I use. The tool that I use is called Guardio. At least it takes away my intervention, the user interventions, you know?
Yeah.
It doesn't require a user to do anything. So anyway, there go our segment. I just want to say last but not least. Okay. To our listener
there,
stay safe, stay informed. Until next time, may your data be secure and the browser history private. I had to say
there that. There you go. That's perfect. That's how we want to end it. We'll be back on Friday, 11 a.m., right here on SEV and KGBC Houston. Thank you.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another edition of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.